pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for being with us on this Monday morning. Glad you could make it. Made it through the weekend. It's always a challenge when you have almost a 10-week-year-old and a 3-year-old. Survived the weekend. Marked safe from, we can talk more about that after a while if you really want an insight into my life. 251-343-0106 is the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Coming up on the program, Shane Stringer, state representative from Citronelle, one of our Monday regulars. Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News as well. And in that 11 o'clock hour, we'll hear from state auditor Andrew Sorrell. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's kick it off here. Trump trial underway again. It just happens to be really kicking about the time this show goes on air. And Michael Cohen's still on the stand. The left-wing media really, they're still, like, really playing this up. But there's some voices of dissent among the chattering class that this is not a good thing. Maybe we shouldn't have done it this way. Maybe this isn't working, or maybe the Cohen not exactly a really good star witness, is he? So, yeah. And I was listening to the guys in the last hour talk about this, about the media. They're covering it, cheering on when something happened. It reminds me of it's not so bad anymore, but a point in the Alabama State House when the press gallery in there would just giggle about whatever was being said on the floor from some of our elected officials. So the Trump trial could wrap this week. I'd be surprised, but there's still a chance, and I've been wrong about these things, but those I talked to that are kind of, I would say on the ground, but in the mix, in the know, think it's it could happen, but not I wouldn't take it to the bank anyway. So if you care about that, we can chat about that. Joe Biden in Atlanta, Georgia, giving a commencement address, and this is the preview, guys, at Morehouse College, what to expect for the 2024 campaign trail. I'll ask this question one more time, guys. Those of you who are on the left out there that listen to this program, that hate listen to the Jeff Poor Show, at this point in time, why is there any reason to feel good about what you're seeing out there? You're down in the polls. The guy you're getting beat by, a guy who's sitting in court right now, literally, and was twice impeached. That's what the polls are telling us. Now, I'm a poll skeptic just like everybody, but typically I think the polls are slanted to give Democrats an advantage. The way they phrased questions, we went through all this last week, that you could get a response that suggests a favorable number for Democrats. It sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not. It's just the pollsters don't have the worldview of flyover country, so they phrase questions in a way that suits their worldview. They try to be objective and unbiased as possible, but they can't help themselves. So I always subtract 5 points for the Republican or for the Democrat in a lot of these surveys. And they oversample certain populations. For a while it was anticipating an African-American turnout like Obama was on the ballot. They knew that wasn't going to be the case. But a past precedent tells us, but Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden weren't Obama. If not for BLM in 2020 and that movement, I think Trump would have been president, but that helped African-American turnout. But this is, anyway, long story short, this is who you're losing to. You're losing to Donald Trump, like I said, in a courtroom right now. And what we saw at Morehouse College yesterday, what is it going to be that's going to close the gap? And it's not a big gap, but it seems insurmountable because there's no reason to believe that Joe Biden has an inning to overcome any kind of lead. He's playing from behind. That's the problem. But no one seems to think this is a big deal on the Democrat side. It's kind of stunning. I take that back. There are people, the Carvels and guys like that, who live in the paranoid echo chamber. But anybody that's like, the way they were so cocky and so sure of themselves that Hillary Clinton was going to win, then there's no way you could ever vote for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was even down in those polls. Comes out and wins in 2016. And there's the same sort of mentality underway in America, or at least among the media. 251-343-0106. But that's my takeaway. I mean, he even turned up the overheated racial rhetoric, and it's just it fell flat. It felt phony. It felt like you're trying too hard. You don't really believe what you're saying, or you don't even know what you're saying. And everybody's pointing to kind of the reaction from the graduates. The alums are excited to see President Biden, but the grads didn't really stir them at all. This suggests there's a cultural shift there underway. This is big news, and we need to spend some time on this. The UAW goes down in flames in Vance unexpectedly. So I spent a little time in Tuscaloosa a couple of weeks ago and just talking to people. I didn't get the sense that the union was going to run away with it, as everybody else had. And they're all basing it on an overwhelming vote in Chattanooga at a Volkswagen plant. And it's like this, guys. Right up the road from Vance, the Amazon facility there, they were trying to unionize. And he got beat twice. They made him do a do-over. And they flew in like Bernie Sanders and all these other Democrat dignitaries. It didn't move the needle. Now, look, I know these are two separate situations, and the UAW has a lot of tools in its arsenal to say we could swing a vote here and there. But the juggernaut UAW still lost on Friday by about 600 votes, give or take a few. I'm sure they're going to try to get a do-over. That's what it sounds like. There is a... Shamari Figures was on with Al Sharpton. Some others talking about this. Oh, well, this is just the first time. We're going to try again soon. I think 600 votes is a significant number of votes to come back with. And, I mean, Mercedes was supposed to be the easiest to unionize. Why, if you can't win on the first try with Mercedes, which was supposedly a slam dunk, do they really think they can win at Hyundai and Honda? Does the union believe that? So, anyway, the efforts to push a state of Alabama, a more of a union kind of state, suffered a setback Friday. We talk about like trying to unionize down our way, even. People got a little ahead of themselves. But this is a significant thing that happened, because talking to people in the political class, especially those that were very anti-union BCA types, I mean, they thought that they were going to lose. But, like, the people there were kind of like, I've never supported a union before. That's just not really what we do here. This collective bargaining and doing away with tenets of a merit-based system. Now, you know, putting good faith in an auto manufacturer from Germany, expecting the best possible outcome, I get it. And here's what this will do. I mean, it wakes up these automakers. It'll wake up some of these, you know, Department of Commerce types and make them understand, hey, you want to keep Alabama business friendly? Well, you've got to keep the unions out. But if you keep the unions out, how do you do that? And you can't just give away everything to these developers and these industries that want to come to Alabama. You got to remember, you're supposed to serve the people who live in the state. Got to figure out the child care, got to figure out health insurance and all of that. But I would have to assume that, like, Mercedes has pretty decent benefits compared to what else is at Alabama. There's no Mercedes-Benz in Vance, Alabama. I mean, Tuscaloosa County is not impoverished. It's not far from Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama. And then to the north there, Birmingham. But, I mean, there's those western suburbs of Birmingham. They sure would suffer. But there's been this concerted effort in Montgomery just to do everything we got to do to get whatever business, XYZ, come to Alabama. We'll build them an overpass off the interstate with an exit ramp, and we'll have all the water and sewer laid down. You just come on to Sweet Home Alabama. We'll have a place waiting for you. But it's not exactly free market now, is it? But whatever, it's what you got to do. 251-343-0106. That's the text line, but a significant setback for the pro union guys on Friday. Katie Britt in the news. She and Ted Cruz have an IVF fix. What do you think of this? If your state decides to restrict the IVF process or procedure, and for whatever reason, well, we're going to take your Medicaid funding away. That'll sure show them on it. Op-ed in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend on Saturday. And I had kind of an incentive not to protect IVF access. Quote, to address these concerns, we will introduce a bill Monday to ensure IVF access is legally protected nationwide. Legislation will require, as a condition of receiving federal Medicaid funding, that states don't prohibit IVF.
He hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold.
251-343-0106. Hit me up on that text line. We'll talk to about some other things on the other side. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. 25 minutes after the hour, State Representative Shane Stringer coming up in the next segment. We'll hit him up. A little bit of a hangover from the legislature session. It was over 2 weeks ago. There's still kind of public sparring over gambling, if you will. The gambling being, and you look at the Alabama Political Reporter, still Josh Boone is like has a string of like 5 days in a row or something of writing they're angry about it still. That it went down how it did. They're not going to try this again next year. They probably won't try it again for a while. But guys, I was talking to one member a couple of weeks ago, and it's just like every time we bring this issue up, it just divides more so than anything. We can knock the Republicans in the legislature. There's a lot that is to be desired from them as conservatives. But they go into gambling mode and they fight amongst each other. And they tell me like nothing else divides us like gambling does. Todd Stacey in his a paywall newsletter writes a little bit about it, how it all shook out. If you really want the gory details, if you follow this enough to know who the yes votes and no votes were and where they were coming from and what they were trying to do to swing a vote, it's I mean, gambling, they don't play around, but they lost once again. I keep using this. It was the 4th-and-31 moment. Under any other circumstance on paper, we ought to be voting in August on a law, on a constitutional amendment. Let's see what we got here. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Martin asks, has Stormy Daniels ever been charged with prostitution? By trying to prosecute Trump kind of sounds like the left is putting the cart before the horse. I don't think she was, I don't think it was prostitution. I don't know that if you non-disclosure agreements, that's an expensive prostitute. $130,000 hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. And I'm telling you what this is all about. It's not about this violation of campaign finance or getting Trump even. They are still trying. They think they could separate Republican evangelicals from Donald Trump by parading all this Stormy Daniels stuff and that he had sex with someone besides his wife. They think that they could do that. That's what's going to win them the election. I just, those evangelicals who were going to vote Trump aren't paying attention to this. They're not playing this on like K-Love. They just don't care. It's insane. Paid escort, I think, is politically correct. Derek says for $136,000, she better do all the cool stuff. I don't know what that could be there, Derek. They text her, do you think the helicopter crash in Iran was an accident? Probably. But the Iranian regime, because when I first saw it, it's like, oh, look at the Israelis. It's a Ferdinand moment. It's World War I all over again. No. To me, when I first saw it, I thought it was like internal domestic politics, like the mullahs or somebody wanted to get rid of this president and he was going to go down swinging. Anyway, 251-343-0106. Keep the text coming. We do appreciate it. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. My eyes are not a
with SRN News, I'm Rich Thomas.
A ragged rebel flag flies high above it all, popping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Now walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with me, your show host. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, Dale Jackson, WVNN, and my former stomping ground, Yellowhammer News. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, State Auditor Andrew Sorrell making his monthly appearance. I figured it was about time to get him on, so he's always interesting. We'll talk about a lot of things with him in that 11 o'clock hour. But joining us now in the meantime, always a pleasure. One of our Monday regulars here, State Representative Shane Stringer, is on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. What have you, how's the, you got the sea legs back under you, back into normal life here post the 2024 legislative brawl?
Yeah, everything's kind of calming down, getting back to our normal day-to-day operations. So glad to get a little break.
Well, let's start here. I'm beleaguered this topic for the last few weeks because we've been out of session for a while, but any residual fallout from your no vote on gaming or gambling or whatever we're going to call it now?
No, you know, nothing in Montgomery, and, you know, all the feedback I'm getting from my district, the people I'm talking to, you know, they're pleased with my vote, and, you know, especially the ones that read the bill and, you know, just had heartburn over it for one reason or another, were happy I took the stance I did and did what I did. And, you know, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, going to Montgomery to represent our districts and our constituents, and that's hopefully what I did in this situation.
Yeah, we're still hearing about it. There's still a lot of media reporting. Our buddies at the Alabama Political Reporter are still obsessed with it, but I don't get the sense that, like, hey, those of you who voted no, including those in the Senate, there's this just groundswell of outrage. Like, how dare you? I mean, there's a comment here and there, but I don't think it's a real thing.
No, and I don't either. You know, just talking to people throughout the district, you know, everybody seemed to understand that this was a very complicated issue. You know, the biggest misconception is that this was a lottery vote, and it was not just a lottery vote. It was a gaming vote. And, you know, that was probably the biggest misunderstanding within the community, is just people, you know, feeling like that we were voting on lottery and not the full-blown gaming.
Yeah, I think you're right, but people believe what they want to believe. We're joined by Shane Stringer of Citronelle here on the line. Representative, the other duty, your police chief there in Criolla, and I know it's a little bit out of your jurisdiction or district somewhat, but what do you make of this? What do you make of what's going on in Mobile, police force-wise, the turmoil there in the mayor's office versus the police chief and the director of public safety and whatnot? What do you think that is, I guess more importantly than anything, that even politically, but even what's it mean for public safety?
It's, you know, it's, I guess, disappointing, as being in law enforcement, to see that kind of negativity coming around. You know, I'm friends with Chief Bryan and have known him for a long, long time, and very professional, sharp guy. And, you know, it ain't been a few months ago that the city was, you know, bragging about how low the crime stats are and, you know, lowest they had been since like 1994 or something like that. So, you know, I don't understand, you know, why things got to the point that we're in the situation we're in now. You know, I would hope that they could have worked that out and resolve differences before it got to that. You know, our state is looking at Mobile now, and it's, you know, not just the state, all the law enforcement across the South. And, you know, I hate that we're in that light, and hopefully we can learn from it and try to grow from it. I personally was impressed with Chief Ryan's performance and what he was able to accomplish as the chief there at Mobile. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Mobile staff is very sharp, squared away. I've worked with most of them guys my whole career. So they're going to pick up the mantle, and they'll keep working hard and doing what they're doing. And the officers are sharp, squared away, and they're going to continue to do their job and hopefully ignore the political side of this.
Any reaction to that what was at least disclosed in that Kenyon Brown report? I mean, I know there's some questions about the credibility or validity of it, but the tactics, I not exactly my expertise here, but like based on what you know about it, do we read anything out of that?
You know, really disappointed in that whole report. You know, I learned this week that Lawrence Batiste, you know, previous chief and public safety director, had been interviewed, and nothing in his interview is in that report, which would seem to be very important. So I don't understand that. But, you know, the fact that with the situation that was involved at Axel Academy, you know, coming out showing that wasn't facts is very damning to the report. You know, anytime you use something in court, if you can prove any part of your report or a report is false or not true, then basically the remainder of the report's not true. And it's, you know, not usable. So I don't know. I think hopefully Mobile, you know, can learn a lot from this situation, and, you know, hopefully this don't happen again. But, you know, I really was disappointed in Brown's report and how that turned out, and, you know, some of the inconsistencies that's been proven so far.
Well, it's just, it seems like a weird internal turf war. I don't know. Like, the way that's structured in Mobile City government, it's not ideal. There's too many. It's one of these situations where there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians or whatever, because there's just who's really in charge of what, and no one can really clearly define that.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. You know, one of the things, being in law enforcement for 32 years, you know, when you hire a chief of police, you're hiring him for his experience and his knowledge in running and being able to organize a department. And when you do that, you know, it's kind of like a marriage. You have to trust him with everything. You have to trust him to do that and do their job. And, you know, that's one of the things I see from time to time between chiefs and mayors. There's, you know, they don't have the trust like it should be between each other or something. And that can lead to complications and even catastrophic failures like we've seen in Mobile. So hopefully, whoever they appoint or make permanent chief in Mobile, they can develop that relationship with the mayor, and they can become, get that trust between each other where they can, you know, they'll trust their chief to do the job and give him full access to the intel unit, everything that he's going to need to do the job.
Well, and the other question I would pose, like, what morale among the rank and file, you know, beat officers, and just that, yeah, you got to think, like, this political turmoil, it can't be good for that at all. And to me, that's what imperils the public safety angle a little bit more. Like, I mean, you're asking a lot of these guys as it is, for them to, like, kind of sit there and think, well, why am I doing this? You know, this is the way we're treated, like as if we're political pawns or something. Then I go do something else in my life or go work in another department.
And that's true. You know, now I'll applaud Major Philip McCrary. You know, he stepped out at the very beginning of this and, you know, made a statement that he was, you know, going to look into the report, and they would be responding to it. And they've really taken him and the rest of the staff at MPD has really stepped out to address the morale and the rank and file guys to make sure that, you know, they're solid and they're good. And, you know, they're going to rally the troops, and they'll get them to focus on the mission, which is protecting and serving the citizens of Mobile, and, you know, which they're very good at. They've got one of the best training academies around. So the guys that are in the staff will, you know, calm things down and get it back to where it needs to be.
Representative, summer is about to be upon us here, Memorial Day, and this will, you know, busy traffic. 45 still out there. And I guess the question I have is this. Now, last time we spent a lot of time talking about this, the ALDOT was going to at least try to, like, impose some speed limit restrictions or do something to try to make it safer. And you and I talk about it all the time. Where are we on that? What do you think? 45, any of those remedies doing, making any difference?
They have done stuff. They have been put the rumble strips in the middle of the highway. That has absolutely helped, in my opinion. You know, like you said, we got summertime and peak season coming on, you know, where we'll see all the beach goers traveling through, you know, Washington County, Citronelle, coming down to the, our beaches on the coast. So you're going to see a mass growth there here shortly. But I think that, you know, some of the things they've done has absolutely helped, but including the working the state trooper, you know, traffic enforcement from time to time. But at the end of the day, that's not the fix all. At the end of the day, they're going to have to put some asphalt on the ground, and we're going to have to address it. You know, I'm constantly speaking with the governor's staff and ALDOT, and, you know, I'll be requesting another meeting with Director Cooper here soon to see what else we've got going and continue to be a squeaky wheel. You know, we have got to continue to fight until we get something done. You know, we've had way too many deaths on Highway 5, and, you know, we had a similar scenario with Highway 98, and once we got it four lane, for the most part, we've had very few fatalities on 98. So I look forward to the day that we can accomplish that on Highway 45, and maybe we can save a lot of lives in doing so.
And for our listeners' sake, you and I have made this an ongoing narrative on this program when you've come on, but it too did lately. 45 is four lane. Once you hit the Mississippi state line, and it continues four lane all the way, I think, like, to Kentucky or something. But when you get to Mobile, I mean, not Mobile, but when you get to Washington County there at the state line, it bottlenecks into two lanes, and it's two lanes for most of its trip down into Mobile County, I guess, to right for you. You get to Pritchard. But a lot of traffic comes down that way this time of year. It's a major north-south thoroughfare, and just for years, Representative, the state has talked about it. I mean, ever since I've been a child, talked about making that a four-lane route from state line all the way into Pritchard, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I've talked to legislators that had been in Montgomery forever, you know, Joe Faust, Coach Shivers, and some of them, you know, and they said it's been a topic ever since they have been in legislature. And I know from talking to some of Representative J.E. Turner's family, you know, he fought that fight the whole time he was there. And, you know, you would think that in that time span, something would be done. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're looking at it wrong from a state perspective. I think when we do look at it, we always look at trying to do the whole, I think it's roughly 59 miles from Mississippi to Pritchard. And I think we've got to get away from that mindset, and we're going to have to tackle it in, you know, in segments, kind of like the pay-as-you-go program we have in Mobile County, and, you know, go in there and tackle, you know, 10 or 20 miles at a time. And, you know, and every time you do that, that's that much less that we have to contend with and deal with. And, you know, and talking with Representative Fred Easterbrook, he agreed, you know, we go in and tackle the the areas that have the majority of the fatality wrecks first, which, you know, just so happens to be in my district. And, you know, I think we'll see a massive change there.
Well, the question I have is this, and I could never get a straight answer, and I think Lieutenant Governor was going to look at it, and do we even know what it would cost? Like, do we even have an idea of what it would cost to do this project?
At one point, I did have a rough guesstimate on the price per mile, and I was able to get that from one of our road builders, not Aldott. Just to get an idea of what we're looking at. I do not have that number right here handy, but, you know, it was a lot. And that goes back to trying to tackle it in a smaller segment. That's doable, you know. And right now with the extra gas tax and the economy doing as good as it is, I think now is the best opportunity we'll probably ever have to do this. You know, one of the talks I had with Director Cooper, you know, last year or year before, they were wanting the county commissions in Washington County and Mobile County to consider putting money toward the projects. But in meeting with the county commissioners, you know, they've got their own roads and bridges to redo and upkeep, and they just was not in a position to help four-lane a state road.
Yeah, that massive tax base of Washington County is going to be able to four-lane a U.S. highway is kind of silly. But, I mean, Representative, we'll get you out of here on this. They're spending $1 billion on that West Alabama corridor. I took the trip up through there. It looks like that Linden Bypass is coming along. I mean, $1 billion to go from Moundville to Thomasville, four-lane road, and that's, I mean, would it cost more than that?
I wouldn't think so. You know, one of the prices on that project that really shocked me was the price for engineer, and I think it was, you know, maybe like $1 million a mile or something.
Yes, $1 million a mile.
It was unbelievable. You know, I'm just like, holy moly. I mean, we're dang near pricing ourselves out of business in the road industry, with some of the price with that and some of the, price for prisons and construction that we're looking at.
Well, yeah, Volcker and Associates making bank off of the engineering there. Representative, we always appreciate your time here, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot. Y'all have a great day.
You do the same. State Representative Shane Stringer there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Plenty of snow.
Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Jeff Poor Show up to talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. We'll get to your text here in the next segment. There's a bunch of them there, but we'll just keep them coming. We do appreciate the feedback. Also, coming up in the next hour, you'll want to stick around. Dale Jackson, WVNN. I'm sure Dale will regale us with his insights on national politics, as he always does. But some of you like him almost as much as you like April Marie Fogel. But Dale Jackson coming up in that next segment, or in the next hour. Let's see here. We're still got Michael Cohen just getting hammered on the defense, on the witness stand by the defense attorneys. Am I wrong here to think that this was a bad idea? What this tells me, though, so think about this. Your best shot at getting Donald Trump and taking him down, getting a conviction, a felony conviction. And I look at this and I'm thinking, this is it? This is what you got? These are the goods? I feel underwhelmed. Like, if this were Bill Clinton and this were Republicans doing this, at least with Bill Clinton, with Republicans, with, I mean, perjury is a, it's on the books. It's pretty easy to figure out for the public to figure out. I don't think your average person even understands this case. I mean, I kind of do. It was like a clerical error, and they're trying to,
hello,
they're trying to make it criminal. But there's like reasonable doubt here all day long, and they just don't have it beyond the shadow of a doubt. They're just not going to get him. I would be disappointed if this were my money shot, as Democrats are making it out to be. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is for the one who drives the big rig.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me, and I will do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Still to come on the program, Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News, and then in that 11 o'clock hour, State Auditor Andrew Sorrell. So that's coming up. Make sure you stay tuned for that. I guess this is breaking news. The way the TV talking heads are acting like it is. Michael Cohen admits he stole from the Trump Organization, claims $30,000, and was the amount. I don't know, what does this mean? You know, like your star witness is now the guy he's testifying against, apparently stole from the guy. What a disaster. You guys on the left who think that this is not good. It just erodes the credibility of the prosecution. I never thought this was a credible prosecution, but then I was always like, well, look, you're a little Republican fanboy, talk radio host guy. The merits of this just continue to diminish. No one seems on the left seems to be like, oh, you got like Joyce Vance going on every 10 minutes on MSNBC talking about the brilliant legal strategy of the Alvin Bragg prosecution, and like, who puts this guy on the witness stand and builds a case around this guy? Like, you're trying to get the W here, but maybe that's not the point. And I think it was just to drag out some of Trump's dirty laundry in hopes that you could separate him from some of his supporters, and no one's paying attention to it. 251-343-0106. As promised, we'll get through some of these text. Rock and Roll Doctor, how much money have the citizens mobile spent on Kenya Brown to put just to cause trouble? Sounds like a shakedown of a complicit mayor. You think so? It's like Kenya Brown said, hey, I got this report you need. Oh, when you start billing by the hour, it adds up. It'd be interesting to hear Francis Martel's take on the Iranian guys crash and burn. I listened to her talking a little bit about it today. There's some skepticism. The thing I like about Francis is like she kind of gets the international media and the way they portray something and can read between the lines. Whereas, like, you know, we're so America-centric here, especially if you get your national news from any of the national outlets, it's always like the helicopter the Iranian president crashed in a mountain somewhere in Iran. What does it mean in Washington, D.C. or Capitol Hill? More at 11.
we'll see what we can do. Martin, every politician in Washington is done. Why Trump is being charged with the worst, and everyone on the planet with an IQ above a grapefruit knows it. I'm not even sure what he's being charged with. Like, Trump says, hey, make this go away. I don't care. And they take money out of his campaign, which I guess is legal. But the way it was kept on the books in New York State, it violated New York State law. Statute of limitations has expired, but they had to, like, reinvent a way to make it relevant to now. It's a weak case. Jeff, please tell your guests to stop saying you know. It's almost in every sentence he speaks. I'm okay with the you know. Everybody has their mannerisms, their character personalities. Like, I'm sure that I'd say things that irritate the hell out of you guys, like library or whatever. But I think we can live with that. Ask about the cluster 158 at I-65. It is a screwed up intersection. It's like five corners or something. How many of you have had the opportunity to take that new, well, it's not new anymore, the 158 route from the state line all the way to 65? So here's what I would do. The state of Alabama is not going to cooperate. I make 45 go all the way down to Bluesdale and hit 98, and they just kind of run concurrently into Mobile. I was coming back from Starkville. A little man and I went to a Mississippi State Auburn basketball game. We went up 45 on the way home. There, if you're familiar with this route, state of Mississippi did something, Mississippi Department of Transportation. Right before you get to the Alabama state line, you go left and continue down 45 to Mobile, or you could go right, which is the four-lane highway they have recently built that goes all the way to Pascagoula. But if you stay on that route, and now it's a few minutes longer, but it seems like it'd be a lot safer. And you stay on that route, and it gets to Loosedale, and then you get on 98, and now with that new connector, it's not as bad. Especially if you're traveling at night. But as for that intersection there, yeah, they need to do something. I don't know, like, trying to read the tea leaves of the Alabama Department of Transportation and why they do what they do, and knowing that so much of it is politics, so much of it is just making the governor or the business community happy. It's a very difficult thing to do. Let's see here, unnamed texter. Why would anybody believe that individuals at Morehouse or 99.8% of others that voted Democrat in the last election would not vote their party again? The election is not about Biden versus Trump. It's about 55% of this nation against Trump. Let me just say this about that. I mean, I don't think you could take the votes for granted. When I say it's a cultural shift, these graduates who didn't, like, get too excited about Joe Biden being their speaker, it wasn't an enthusiastic response from the Morehouse class of 2024. But it's because he's not liberal enough. So it dampens enthusiasm. You're right. They're not going to go out and vote for Trump. But if they stay home, I mean, Biden needs every vote he can get in Georgia. If those voters stay home, if a certain age demographic stays home, he's in trouble. So, you know, you got to look at politics this way. The idea is to flip a vote. Once you take a vote away from someone else, hopefully it goes to you. But the vote goes away from someone else to no one is half the battle. And they got a problem. The Biden guys got a problem here. How do they reunite the party? What is, and take Republicans out of this, take swing voters out of this. What does Joe Biden have? What special skill does he have that will arouse the discontent and sway it away in his party? Is he going to declare war on Israel? Well, then he loses votes on the other flank of his Democratic Party. It's this thing, and I never would have picked this in a million years, that would have been the one issue that ruins the grand coalition of the modern Democratic Party. But Israel and the existence of Israel versus Gaza, and it's remarkable, because you look at what the Democratic Party is right now. It's the environmentalist, it's the pro-abortionist, it's the LGBTQist, it's all of these different constituencies, but they more or less coalesce around one political party, the glue that had held it together and still continues to hold it together for the most part is Donald Trump. Just a hatred for Trump. It's like a party held together with duct tape and bungee cords, and one of the bungee cords is going to break. Is this weird new take the modern left has on the existence of Israel? I mean, they're in a race. You look at the Trump wagon's not exactly the most efficient wagon. It's got problems, but it's got a big old motor, right? But you look at like the Biden wagon, it's like just kind of like it's just pieced together. It's making it down. It's smoking, but somehow they give it a head start, an unfair advantage. And it's just doing all it can to get to the finish line, but there's no reason to think it's going to make it to the finish line in one piece, I think. Listening to this talk on Highway 45, widening Highway 45, you can do it from an economic development standpoint. Mobile can't go much further west. You need to go north, and plenty of great property for inaugural sites up that way and along 158. I don't know, guys. The state is so stuck in the mud on that. They don't, the Montgomery does not want that Highway 45 to be four lane ever. I don't know what it is. I tell the story, I'll tell it again real quick. When I was living in a family, a dad, for some reason, one of the jobs he had was one of the paper mills in Pritchard, and they were rebuilding a boiler or something, and we were living in Sims, and this had to be 84, 85. The hurricane, everybody has to evacuate. Everybody's still kind of like, I know Frederick was years earlier, but everyone's spooked by that. So for whatever reason, when we evacuate, when we head north, I mean, I'm sure most of the evacuees were heading up I-65 or 43 or something. For some reason, we went up 45. Or even 98, I don't know. But for what reason, we went up 45. I just remember as a child sitting in traffic between Mobile and Citronel, thinking, well, it's 1980, whatever. Someday this will have to be four lane. And here I am, my late 40s, and that road's still not four lane. And I don't know why. There's not enough traffic on it? Are you kidding me? 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink?
Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Del Jackson coming up in the next segment. Please stay tuned for that. So when I said large industrial sites, reading the last texter's typo, we missed the correction there. Tim, Jeff, they never should have four-lane Highway 98. All it did was make it harder for you to navigate 98. They should have spent money four-laning 158. And the plan is to someday, I would think. I think that's what you do, right? You're a 45 traveler. You're driving from Tupelo to wherever, Mobile. Let's say you're on Orange Beach. And instead of like going down through Washington County and Citronelle down the old 45, you just hang that exit and you go down the old new Pascagoula four lane and never seen anybody get on. I don't know why. And then you hang that Louis when you get to Loosedale and go down 98 into Mobile. That'll at least route traffic that way. Let's see. Just heard Katie, AKA the chosen one, may get to nod for Trump. VP, complete and total blank. Complete. Zero. I said it. Zero experience other than chief of staff and, 2 years in the Senate? I guess that only fits. I mean, she's got as much experience as Barack Obama had when he became president. I don't think it's necessarily a bad pick. She's got a little work to do on, like, being ready for the national stage. On paper, it's a great pick. Now, you have to ignore the State of the Union response, and that's America's introduction to her. And it was so shameful what they did. They humiliated her. They over exaggerated the. It wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't the finest hour, but it wasn't as bad as it was made out to be. But that hurt her. That's going to take a lot of work for her to overcome, Derek. I don't think she's a front runner. I honestly don't. Now, as the others fall by the wayside, the Kristi Noems, and I mean, who knows? It's like this VP race is like a battle of attrition. I mean, like you see Elise Stefanik going on Fox News yesterday, just getting hammered. Well, she didn't really get hammered, but. You wouldn't expect hostile fire from Shannon Bream. Don, good morning, Jeff. Great picture, by the way, on your Facebook page of your happy family. Quick question. When Trump gets elected this November, do you think his administration will finally be able to open investigations into the obvious crimes on the other side? Or will they just leave the dead horse lying, literally? Well, they're going to face a lot of resistance. But like the plan has to be this, Don. He's got to clean out the administrative state. They got to do something there. You got to bring in somebody to just reform the intel agencies. They've way overstepped their bounds. They're way too political. We don't need to be run by these spy agencies. The country's falling in that trap, though. My name Texter. My vote is for Israel. I hope they did the deed. I had four Iranian officers in my class at Great Lakes Naval School. Later, we were told when they sent back, they were all killed, plus their families after Khomeini came back in exile from France. Ashley from Loosedale. I take the new route every day. Can't wait to see the summer traffic. Well, tell me this, though. I mean, like, do you travel that much between Waynesboro and Loosedale, I don't know. Like, it can handle some more traffic, and I think it's up to the state of Mississippi, but that may be a proposal I float around out there. Paul, what did you think of Joe Skirbel saying Team Biden acts like they are holding four aces? I would have to be watching Skirbel to have an opinion on that. I think he's probably right, though. Yeah, a casual observer would know that's not true. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some tell my mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got to run to make.
Singing Roll Tide Roll. Watch the pain ride out my soul. I don't want to miss her no more, but I can't help it. Cause I got Bama on my mind, even here in Mexico.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line. That's how you get in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. Join us now on the line. We do this on Mondays. Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News. Dale, good morning. How are you?
I'm super excited to be here. I'm thrilled to be here, getting ready to go on a vacation, and I can't wait.
Where are you going? Where does Dale Jackson go on vacation?
I don't know, man. I just get in the car and go where my wife takes me.
That's a lie. Where are you going this time? It's like Disney on Ice or something?
Why don't you go to Disney on Ice to go to vacation? No, we're just going to the beach. Going to the beach.
Which beach this time?
Some beach in Florida.
Not making it back, not drinking it back down to Orange Beach again, huh?
I don't know. I go wherever my wife tells me to go. I mean, I know you don't believe that, but that's the truth.
Well, I mean, like the guy whose whole shtick is like, I hate my wife and my kid.
You think I want to have a discussion with her about vacation? No, fine, whatever. Well, go wherever you say. Just stop talking to me about it.
All right. Well, fair enough. Hey, let's start here. How racist is it to get in an argument with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at a committee hearing? We've hit pretty much a peak status here for congressional depravity.
Yeah, it was pretty trashy and pretty sad. And my favorite thing about the whole thing was Jasmine Crockett.
Yes.
Puts out a T-shirt and then misspells her own name. It's really delightful. It's just delightful trashiness. Jerry Springer stuff, which we should all be very proud of, that our country has decided to go down this path. And it's embarrassing. It's pretty embarrassing. But, you know, look, Joe Biden's embarrassing us every day. It can't possibly get any worse.
I mean, I'm not as bothered by it. I don't know. You used to have people like go have duels in the streets in the Capitol. I mean, if it's a little... A little hair-pulling contest between the female members of Congress doesn't seem like it's that outrageous.
I mean, it is pretty outrageous, actually. They're yelling at each other over their appearances and things like this.
Yeah,
the equivalent is someone standing up and being like, Jerry Nadler, you are so fat. Why are your pants pulled all the way up to your nipples? I mean, like that's the equivalent.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? That would be, we saw that.
Yeah, well,
it humanizes these people. I'm not saying that. It does.
Wrong.
I'm playing a little devil's advocate here on you. It does because people don't talk like the distinguished gentleman from Kentucky has a good. People don't talk like that. I mean, it's like
no. That's see, Jeff. Look, I'm very surprised to hear this for coming from you because I want Congress to be like we saw in the little movies we used to watch on the 8mm film in schools. Well, the gentleman from Virginia,
but
please
that's not
understand.
Real. That's not
that's
real life.
And
you, no, it's not. But the
I
one,
want, I want Dale Jackson to be the bottom barrel of what would be required to operate in Congress. Nobody beneath me should be in Congress, and right now there's a lot of people beneath me that are in Congress.
Well, I mean, it's the people's house. I think
the people suck.
You have a little bit of a. It shouldn't devolve into that, but it's not. Let's take it off the pedestal for a moment, you know?
Maybe we should put it back up on the pedestal.
Or maybe we should just worship at the altar of the government, Dale. And that should be our, like, and we should just worship. Yes. And it should be above everything, above board. Yeah, you can't.
Raising your voice so you think this is a good point. But let me tell you why it's not. I'm actually advocating against what the government is doing right now and saying that it's wrong. You're the one saying, no, this is fine. I disagree. So I think you're the one who's worshiping at the altar of Jasmine Crockett.
That is
Alexander
the worst comeback,
Ocasio-Cortez. I don't know. You're suggesting that I'm worshiping at the altar of government because I think it should be better. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm not. I didn't say you should worship at the altar of government. Where did you get that?
You said I do worship at the altar.
No. I said maybe we all should. We should make government. We should put it up on this pedestal that's like right next to the church, maybe a little higher than the church, and expect just a grand, eloquent grammar going back and forth between the members of Congress. You're right.
How about this? Let's just agree that maybe it should be somewhere in between where we're at, what you're suggesting.
It's not that I'm condoning this. See, it's not the worst thing in the world, like people are making it out to be.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty embarrassing.
We should not care this much.
Who's had a massive stroke is calling them out. Come on. This is bad. It's real bad.
But I'm just telling you, we should not, like, live, die, eat, breathe that, oh, my God, can you believe what Marjorie Taylor Greene did?
I don't think you had to live, die, eat, or breathe it, but when they're brawling this way on the floor.
And they're not brawling.
You pay attention
and they're not
to
on
it.
The they're floor. Leaving. They're not even
they're,
on the
you're,
floor.
They're in a house. You're there in a house committee here.
They had a guy having sex in there like a couple few months ago, dude. And
Jeff, if you want to defend a guy getting pounded on the days, that's fine. I think it's bad, so I'll take that position. You can have the other one.
But I'm just saying, you act like it's up here, like it's like I don't know, like it's Holy Land. It's sacred. It's the same problem with the January 6th stuff, like. Why the penalties are so much higher for the Capitol than, say, a federal courthouse in Oregon? Like, it's just we expect more, but we're not going to get more.
I mean, that may be true. We should still be able to say this sucks. And again, I'd also point out that I did not bring this up. You did. So this is not bothering me at all.
What would you rather talk about? We could talk about the mom bracket. Is that better?
I mean, yeah. Are you suggesting this is better?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's an interesting take. I would have to disagree with you, but okay.
Will you stop tweeting during our appearance?
I'm not tweeting anything.
Yeah, just lay out the social media while you're on the radio.
I'm not doing anything. I'm actually buying tickets to the Rickwood Classic while we were speaking, but okay.
You how are you going to get tickets to that?
I don't know. They're having a different game there. I'm kidding.
The minor
Barons
league game.
And the Biscuits are playing ahead of time, I believe.
It would have been cool to go see the Giants and the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. That would have been neat.
Yeah. And those of you listening, the Rickwood Field, like the oldest ballpark still operational in the country in Birmingham, is hosting a throwback game between the Giants and the Cardinals. It's like Memorial Day weekend, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe it's taking place in June. I'm not sure exactly when the actual
beyond that.
Game is. It's somewhere like that, but I'm not 100% sure.
Joined by Dale Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News. So, Dale, you were at a event last week hosted by our friends at Yellowhammer News, your employer. Tell me, what was the main topic people were talking to you about?
How I killed gambling.
Well, it wasn't about you killing gambling, necessarily.
I mean, you asked the question. I gave you the answer. You weren't there, so I don't know how you're arguing.
I listened to your show, like, and you told it. You said it was about gambling. It wasn't about how you killed it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to kill gambling. Yes, it was about gambling and how there's so much work to be done here and all these other things that have to happen in order for gambling to get done. And you know, I talked to a lobbyist and I turn around and talk to a lobbyist for something else. And they'd say, well, if they just let us pass ours, you know, we don't even need a constitutional amendment to get this done. And then we would just be able to get it all done afterwards. We just got to break the seal here. And I think they're right about that. You know, I think it's exactly what has to happen. Something has to get through and then everything else will follow. Getting it all done at once, I think, is probably not the way this is going to go.
You just can't break the seal, though. That's what you got to keep from happening if you don't want gambling. Because if they get this done, if they get the constitutional amendment, I mean, then what people don't understand is the legislature could come back and do whatever it wants.
Right. I agree with that. But there's, you know, the sports betting people, then there's the casino, the online casino people, then there's the people that just want to allow table games for the poor tricks and the lottery for everyone else. I mean, you just have all these different entities. They were all in that room. And I talked to them all. And it was interesting. And I heard somebody starting a rumor about how Kay Ivey might be resigning soon.
I hadn't heard that one. Tell me something.
What?
Well, I don't know what the chirping is going on back there on the computer, but
yeah, you are not hearing anything on my computer. I'm doing nothing. I'm literally sitting here staring at a computer screen.
Anyway, I'm watching like Dale's timeline here. I see little Dale Jackson retweeted, and as we talk, hey,
I think
Dale,
that's coming from your computer.
Okay. Dale, tell me this. Well, back to the gambling, back to the topic at hand here. What do you, people just want to vote on a lottery? I don't. That's. They're still rolling with that. I still don't think that's true, even after all of this.
Yeah, it was never true. It's never been true. Never will be true. I mean, it's just blatantly false. Nobody believes it, and they may keep saying it, but it doesn't make it true.
Well, that's the coming out of, and there's a little like hurt feelings here between Blackshear and the Senate. And I suppose kind of interesting, a statement put out by Speaker Ledbetter's office from Blackshear suggests at least that the Speaker put his seal of approval on whatever you want to call Representative Blackshear's remarks. Representative Blackshear, if you're listening, was the sponsor of this big House gambling package. And it's sort of like you said, everything all at once, like the entire apple in your mouth, and just kind of a snitty little statement put out by the Speaker's office attributed to Blackshear right after all of this.
Yeah, he and Blackshear and I had an interaction at this event on Friday or Thursday, I guess it was, and I really thought it was interesting. In the sense that I was clearly joking. I said to him, I said, hey, I hear we're opening up a casino in Phoenix City. And he leaned in. He's like, well, you can't because there's an ordinance against it. And I'm like, okay, sorry.
Can't, you know, laughs. It's been a rough session, Dale.
he was not happy. I was like, man, I mean, rough room here. I guess everyone else laughed, but he did not find that amusing based on our interaction we had earlier in the year, which apparently was quite the topic of conversation with him in the legislature. So I'm sorry that I asked him why he thought casinos were good for the rest of the state, but not for Phoenix City.
Yeah.
And then, I think we all know why, but it is what it is.
It was weird, right? Because he's like going on talking about the virtues of casino gambling and, well, we got to legalize it to criminalize it or whatever. And then all of a sudden, And you do your little shtick with, hey, I'm a degenerate gambler. I love to go down to Tampa and watch old people put money into penny slots all day long. And then he's like, yeah, that's great. And you said, like, well, if so good, would you want casinos in Phoenix City?
Of course not. Of course. They have a long history of problems there. And apparently there's an ordinance that says you can't do it.
Well, it's kind of funny because he could work
to get that ordinance repealed, I guess.
Well, he kept trying to make that about, like, you know, like, well, you know, we got ordinances. Well, we'll just pretend there's no ordinance there. And you had to, like, ask him, like, what, three times? And he finally was like, no, we can't ever have casino gambling in Phoenix City again, okay?
Yeah, so we put casino gambling in my backyard. They just ask every single person saying yes to this stuff, if they would be okay with it in their backyard. And most of them will say no.
No, and so, like, we get to this, like, lottery-only stuff, and I was listening to Senator Orr on your show Friday, and he sounds like he wants to try to solve the world's lottery problem, well, Alabama's lottery problem.
Yeah, and he believes he could just put it in there and say, okay, it's going to be just a singular lottery bill, and the Portrees can do whatever they want. I mean, that's basically, and that's how it'll be framed when it comes up for debate. So let's just call it what it is, because that's basically what it does. And I don't know if that can pass, but I think if you get it to where people can actually have a vote on it, it absolutely passes. I just don't think you can get it out of committee.
No, I mean, it would all go to the ETF if Orr's doing it, I suppose. Is that really, everything going to the education budget? Because I've always,
I've always heard this. Growing up in Alabama, and we've been talking about lottery all my life here, and it's always the only way it's ever going to happen, guys, is if it's an education lottery. And I don't know that that's true.
I mean, the more they try to slip it into the ECF, the more resistance they run into, right? I mean, that was a last minute thing, and I just don't think that this is where this is all going to go.
Is that where people, I mean, seriously though, like you and I are sitting here and we're talking about this and a lottery raises a bunch of money. Is the money, is it best for the money to go to the education budget?
Well, you got to remember that's a selling point.
Let's forget about that though. Just forget about the selling point. And let's just talk, like, is that good policy?
No, of course it's not good policy. I mean, if the premise here is education in Alabama is bad because we don't have enough money, then sure, make that argument. If they've had record years of ETF strength and they have not, I'm even using their language, ETF levels, and I wouldn't say education's got better in the state.
No, absolutely not. That's why it bothers me that, like, the teachers' lobby and the teachers' union education lobby is so much clout over this, even this, to say, well, the only way we're gonna allow it to go through is if it goes to education.
Okay, don't let it go through then.
Well, I'm not a member of the legislature.
No, I know. I'm just saying that would be my response. Okay, fine. I don't really think this is a good thing for Alabama anyway. So okay, cool, great.
No, well, it's like two wrongs make a right, the right of the money going to schools cancels out the wrong of the gambling in the lottery.
Yeah, maybe they can frame it that way. I just don't truly understand why they took something to the floor they didn't have the votes for, making their problems even more complicated. There's no reason to do that. Zero reason to do all of that. They could have just waited until they had all the votes and go from there.
Well, did you see how that unfolded? They come to an agreement on Tuesday afternoon. I know this is like old news 2 weeks ago, but like 10 minutes later, it's in the House getting voted on. And then it's coming up at 11 p.m. in the Senate. And then that's where like they didn't waste time. They thought they had the votes.
Yeah, they didn't want to. I guess they counted wrong.
Well, this is done for a while, I hope, right?
Good.
I think it's done for a while. They're not going to try it next year for sure. They will try it in an election.
It comes
year.
Up all the time. They're constantly talking about this.
It won't be. Because have we ever had a legislative session where we talked about, I mean, we talk about gambling every session, right? Where we are just, it's like edge of your seat, vote after vote sort of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know why. If they came up with an agreement or thought they could get an agreement, someone's going to offer up some form of lottery bill or gambling bill. Someone's going to do it. I mean, hell, Orr's talking about it, right? So who knows?
Well, yeah, you're right. But I feel like the House wants to have everything on it. All the, or call it like all the traveling companions, all the hangers on or whatever, that's the only way you get the Democrats to go along with it.
Yeah, I think you just wait till the day when everyone's like going down and trying to hit the bars before the session's over. You just slip it in there, you can't pass it, and then you roll the dice.
Whatever the Seafood Association has their happy hour. That's the popular one, Dale.
There we go.
That is when they are in a hurry to get down and then to get the shrimp cocktail with the whatever the margarita and you know the drill. That's the big reception.
Yeah, I'm in. Okay, so plot it for that day. That's the day.
Right. You'd have to drop it. That's get through committee, and then you hold the vote on Seafood Day.
Seafood Day it is.
Awesome. Dale, folks want to find you online, and they want to chat you up. They want to read your seven things. How can they do so?
I don't know. Apparently, you're following me on Twitter right now, so I guess you just go in there and twitter.com/TheDaleJackson. It's The Dale Jackson absolutely everywhere, so go follow me. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, JeffForceFeetFinder.net.
Yeah, that's not really a thing, but adult.
That was nice. You got them to rebrand it that way after their biggest user.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Anyway, Dale Jackson, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5.
next, Paul Feinbaum. College football season never ends. We're your home for coast-to-coast coverage of the game you love.
Paul Feinbaum, weekdays at 2 on FM Talk 106.5.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Andrew Sorrell, state auditor, coming up in the next hour at the bottom of the hour. So you want to make sure you stick around for that. We'll get through some of your text over the next couple of segments here. Fire Dog. Diversity except for Jews. Equity also except for Jews. And inclusion except for the state with differing opinions. Oh, and Jews. There is a common thread there, Fire Dog, that we are, and we, I guess we're expected just to kind of ignore and pretend it's not a real thing. I don't know. You tell me that, guys. But it does look like whatever there is, the whenever the Jewish people are involved, there does seem to be a common thread there. Let's see here. Jason, adding the new Chick-fil-A at 158 in Shelton Beach will help it all. Saraland isn't growing without a plan. But would I ever thought Saraland really, really grow? I think eventually, though, they will do something there. But who knows? Like I said, you never know with the Alabama Department of Transportation. Josh, thanks for giving us a shout-out about giving Highway 45 a widening. Governor Ivey and Aldot John Cooper must really not like Mobile County. They have a whole discussion about the way they do roads and politics and the way South Alabama kind of gets... Well, I wouldn't say the short trip, but a different approach, a different managerial style than the rest of the state. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Hour number three now underway. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, you text me. That's how we communicate on the Jeff Moore Show. Andrew Sorrell, state auditor, coming up in about a half hour. So please stick around for that. Update on the Trump trial. Now they're doing a redirect of the prosecution is on Cohen, and it's just this thing is leaking oil, guys. There's no other way to describe it. Your star witness is a fraud. Okay, he's a thief. You built a case around this guy. Maybe the New York jury won't care, but I can't imagine that this is, if you're building a prosecution, you're going to take down the former president of the United States. And this is your, like, you got like one good prime shot. It's going to blow him out of the water, upset his campaign, and give us Ron DeSantis or whoever, Nikki Haley, is our nominee. This is it? This is what, that was the plan? Did you see this? The Washington Post kind of coming out swinging back at the DEI policies, and they've gotten so ridiculous in some places where they require like a loyalty pledge or, you know, an ideological pledge. Look, this DEI stuff. Maybe it was a good idea at one time, but what it has become. It's allowed the current editor of AL.com to run a newsroom and say that he doesn't want to hire any more straight white males. I mean, it's just like this like ever evolving push for diversity, but it's not real diversity. It's like manufactured. It's just the total rejection of meritocracy. Which defies like kind of the capitalism tenets of our economy, right? So finally, the Washington Post is getting a little ridiculous now. These pledges they're making these college students sign. And it's not like ideological diversity. It's we need more of these. I still don't believe people really want that kind of diversity in their lives. But this is what the elites in America, the corporate elites, the political elites, the Hollywood elites think is we could just engineer a perfect society. And it's got ridiculous at the academy, at the academic level. The Washington Post in their editorial on Sunday said, hey, you probably jumped the shark here. How much of that do you think is Amazon's Jeff Bezos having that as his platform? 251-343-0106. Let's go through these texts. We're still kind of working our way up. Mariner, you would take the West Alabama Highway from Tupelo once it's completed. Well, you can't really do. I mean, not really. And so you would take what? You're really backtracking there a whole lot, because you're making a big jog to the east and then going south. And just think of everything, Mariner, in a straight line. B-45 is the way to go. 45 is a good road to the Mississippi-Alabama state line. Not a lot of traffic. It's wide open. It's four lanes. There's not a whole lot there. They built bypasses around Quitman and Waynesboro. You don't have to deal with that. And then you hit the state line, and it's like 70 miles of misery. Yes, if you, the ultimate West Alabama corridor is probably 30, 40 years away, where you would take the new Interstate 22 to Hamilton or Winfield and then go south on 43. Because the West Alabama corridor, I doubt they ever finish that thing, to be honest. I think once there's a new governor that whatever's done is done and they're moving on. They're not going to finish it all the way to Tuscaloosa. Unnamed texter, Stefanik will be the pick. I don't know. I mean, what does she bring? And she wants it too bad. You can just tell by her her personality, her persona on that interview with Shannon Bream. If you haven't seen it yet, Unnamed texter, you'll say like, she feels a little Nikki Haley-ish. KCC, I moved to Eastern Shore in 72, and I still had a living parent and relatives in Starkville, Mississippi. I mean, I think you meant parent. During that time, I cannot tell you how many trips I made up 45. So my mom is from Tupelo. My dad's a Mississippi State graduate. He's where he got his MBA. We lived in Brooksville, West Point. I know that road well. And then my grandparents, ultimately, they moved right across the Tennessee state line, kind of near Selmer, Bolivar. So you'd go all the way up to Corinth and into Tennessee. And like the Highway 45 is like seared into my like upbringing. I remember when it was a two-lane road through Mississippi. It was horrible. Now it's a pretty decent way to go. Trump needs to fire the top 15 echelons of the administrative state. But here's the problem. And you think about this, Unnamed texter. If you go on a mass firing spree, you still got people that could do the jobs in these. Like, they've invented bureaucracies that are... It's like we start taking pieces away. It's like a big Jenga puzzle, and it's the whole system collapse. Well, the American economy, even the civil society, can't weather that. You've got to do it in a way that's kind of graceful. And I know that's like an analogy, but if you like eliminate the top 15 echelons of the ATF, and then all of a sudden you have alcohol, tobacco, and firearm problems all over the country. Look at what Trump did. He cut the budget, you know. I mean, so you got to do it in a way that takes out the bad actors, and you got to replace them with good actors, or at least guys that can, like, whittle some of these departments down, like the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice, which is just an abomination of abuse of public policy and power. And you can't just go. It's like a lot of you guys aren't listening to shit. Just burn it all down and we'll start all over. But like chaos will ensue. You got to exercise some discretion here. It's just the problem is it's got to start somewhere, and you can't even get it started. Even with Donald Trump as president, as we learned in 2016 and 2017, we had Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and all these talking heads. Oh, you don't want to get on the bad side of the intel community. Well, since when do we care what the intel community thinks about anything except what's going on as far as a threat to public safety? Paul, they may have 9 million more eligible voters than in 2020. Yeah, but like getting Democrats to vote, I don't know. Unnamed Texter, I think I know who this is. Are you that 10-year-old who used to write letters to the newspaper where the state and county should be building new roads? Did they ever listen to you? They would have listened to me back then. Yeah, that was I was that guy. Named Texture. Dell Jackson seems to want everybody to play nice and work across the aisle. People want Trump for the exact opposite reason. They want somebody to play like the Dems, whatever it takes. Derek, I love Dale, total nihilist. I hope he is shooting whiskey, chasing a Budweiser, then goes and punches a baby. It's all an act. Derek, just between you and I, that's all. What you hear from me is me. What you hear from Dale is a little bit of show business. Now, I'm not saying you don't believe what he says. The nihilism, Bart, for sure, though. Pat. Shots fired in my neighborhood. Police are on the scene via my wife. Gotta love Mobile. Mr. Plot, can you imagine all the hateful things they will say about Tim Scott if he accepts the VP slot? We saw a little bit of this when he gave the State of the Union response. You guys remember that? Was it Glenn Kessler of the PolitiFact or one of these fact checkers? They went back in his lineage, and how awful is this? So he'll talk about, you know, his ancestors being a slave or whatever. It's not hard to trace that back if you're an African American in the South. They did something so despicable, like that his ancestors were like traitors to the cause. Traitors to ending slavery, emancipation. They will do that again if he is to pick. I think he would be a good pick. I mean, he checks a lot of boxes for Trump. Obviously, the minority stuff, yes. But he's kind of low-key. Don't you think Trump likes a low-key vice presidential component? The only problem is he's a little establishment up. I don't know. You just feel like his early tenure in the U.S. Senate, he was really, really cozying up to leadership, doing what he was told. But I would say this about that. Tuberville's kind of the same way. Now look at Tuberville. No, Mr. Plott, you're absolutely right. They will try to destroy whoever he picks. These people, it's all about, you know, the ends justifying the means. This is what they do. That they look at themselves as like this canary in a coal mine sort of existence in the media, and they think to themselves, what will my grandkids say if I didn't do everything I could to stop Donald Trump from being president again? And they believe this. I mean, they're not full of themselves. Because, you live in that inside the Beltway Manhattan sort of environment. It's not really steeped in reality. And you start believing, all of the, deep state shenanigans and all of the crazy people within the bureaucracy, the State Department down at Foggy Bottom. Knowing that the President of the United States could just, kill your job right away. Here's what I would like. Here's what I would like to see. You want to get me a rallying around Donald Trump? Not that I'm not already, but here's what they need to do. You remember in 16, he put out his list of Supreme Court picks or whatever, potential Supreme Court picks. It was a pretty long list. It was all just federal society stuff. Here's what we need. The list of positions that he is going to eliminate and agencies he's going to reform if president. These jobs are history by executive order once I come into office. People would love that. He would get annihilated probably by the media, but whatever. He's going to get annihilated by the media anyway. 251-343-0106. Text me. We'll try to get to him before the conclusion of today's program. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
What I had, but honey, now I do. And don't it make my brown eyes? Don't it make my brown eyes? Don't.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Mainstream media are beside themselves over this Cohen revelation that he stole money from the Trump organization and admitted it on the stand. Good job, guys. Maybe if you'd had a better relationship with Trump, you might have known this before you built this guy up to be the some kind of Boy Scout. Well, a Boy Scout of 20 years ago, not today's Boy Scouts, apparently. That would be something. Michael Cohen was something else. Let's see here. Dan, why don't we hear from Dan Crenshaw anymore? He's not as... There was something about, the war veteran, and I don't know. Now, let me tell you about these guys. Sometimes they go on a national media they have a national media plan, and it's about something they're pushing. They hire that kind of comms team. Look, there's 100 different ways to be a member of the Congress. You can have you could be try to work your way up into leadership. You could be just bring it all home for the district. Whatever it is you want to be. And the media strategies reflect that. So you'll see some members of Congress go really heavy on national media, or they'll go really heavy on local media, or some just won't do any media at all. Matt Gaetz. Let's compare Jerry Carl and Matt Gaetz. And why you see Matt Gaetz all the time on Fox, but not Jerry Carl. Well, there's 435 members of Congress. But it's all about, the kind of people you have in place, and it's your fundraising. The leadership doesn't necessarily want a freshman member of Congress being on TV every night. But why was Dan Crenshaw doing it for a while? He was probably a good representation of the Republican Party, and they thought, well, let's get this guy out, and he turned out to be more like Mitt Romney, and they said, okay, let's reel him back in, so there's any number of reasons. Dirt Digger. Clint Eastwood says it best about Dale. He is a legend in his own mind, but not on the Jeff Moore Show.
And Derek says Trey Gowdy for DOJ. I don't know. The thing about Trey Gowdy, Derek, was this. He talked a big game when he was chairman of the House Oversight Committee. What did he ever do? Are we still waiting for the big heat-seeking revelation from Benghazi and Hillary Clinton? When they put Hillary on the stand or in the committee and she sat for like 18 hours or something absurd, then they got nothing out of it. And this was all at Trey Gowdy's behest. They didn't land their blow. But it wasn't just that. It was a bunch of other things he was doing. This is just in the tradition of House Oversight Republicans. James Comer is now the new version of this. They go on TV a lot. Nothing ever happens from what they're talking about. Is that the kind of attorney general that we need, especially if you think there's like rampant widespread corruption within federal government? Interesting. In search of the internet for information concerning the new editor, and his previous job declared a hiring freeze on straight white males, your 1819 article concerning the controversial past was the only one I could find on the subject. Also, it took several rephrasing attempts to even find out what's going on. Well, do you think Google is the arbiter, a fair arbiter? No, it was a real thing. That was something he allegedly said. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.